This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Season 2014-15 preview, continuing with another division. If you've listened to any of the other divisions, thank you for listening, and just keep coming along because we got six of these that we're chugging out for you. My name is Andrew Reich. I am a hoop scribe for the Place to Be Nation website. You can read pretty much all my basketball stuff there wherever you go. And this one, we're going to be doing a division that is pretty loaded, I'd say. I don't say like tipsy loaded, like loaded as in pretty damn good. Do you think this one's pretty good, Adam Murray?
Thanks for having me. This is probably the most even conference where you have four, or maybe all the teams can potentially be in the same sort of area, depending upon how San Antonio decides to fare.
So we're going to go ahead and just get things right into the nitty gritty. And we know that San Antonio in this division won the NBA championship, but the one before that, and there's only two others. This is kind of a trivia question for y'all just to help y'all out. There are only two other teams in this division that have in history won an NBA title outside of the Spurs, and we're going to tackle the first one, and that was the Dallas Mavericks. Now, the Dallas Mavericks won the NBA championship not too long ago. That was 2011. But this one is a weird team because it's a far different team, but we have some familiar faces.
Yet again, they've decided to overhaul their roster. Couple overpayments, couple role player guys. They really decided to change it up again. I don't know why.
So they went 49-33, not bad, a lot better than they did in 2013 when for the first time in, I can't even remember how long, I think 2000, it was the first time they missed the playoffs. But they got back in, and they had the last spot. They got the last spot in the last game of the season when they beat Phoenix. Did they have the – yeah, they did. They did have the last spot. They wound up eighth because they lost to either Memphis or another team in their last game of the regular season. And they wound up with their division rival San Antonio Spurs. But I want to ask you this just to kind of get it out the way really fast. Why did they give so much trouble to San Antonio Spurs when the Spurs easily dispatched their next three playoff opponents?
Every team always has that one team as a thorn in their side, and for San Antonio, it's Dallas for some unknown reason.
You know why my theory is? I think that this is really sneaky, but I think DeJuan Blair knew that team inside and out, and that's why he played so many minutes against the Spurs.
But every year it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. There's always that one team that's the snake to your mongoose. You know, you'll still beat them at the end, but they're not going to make it easy. But the thing is, with San Antonio, every year they face a new team now. This year they overpaid Parsons. Yeah. That was probably their big signing. They poached Houston for him. And who else did they? They got Jameer Nelson. They got old man Richard Jefferson.
Well, they got a familiar face back from the 2011 title team because they got Tyson Chandler in a trade along with they had to bring Raymond Felton and all of his excess baggage, pun intended, to Dallas in the trade so that they could get Chandler. I can understand the reason why they took Chandler because their rebounding last year was very bad. They were 26 overall. And so bringing Chandler in is kind of a good safeguard to trying to get your rebounding back up. But age isn't on his side. And I don't know if their defense is going to be that improved. They were 20th overall in scoring defense. It's an interesting little overhaul that they did. Like you were saying, they did re-sign Bernard James and Devin Harris. But look at the people they brought in. It's kind of like a who's who and a few what the f's. You know, they got Jameer Nelson. They brought in Al-Farouq Aminu, who's kind of like a slasher
He's for defense only.
Mm-hmm. Richard Jefferson, right at the end of his rope.
Yeah, Richard Jefferson won't provide. He's just insurance if Parsons goes down or. Jameer Nelson, he's good, but he's old. He'll give you what he gives you. Felton as a backup, not too bad. Yeah. Chandler will be the anchor of the defense. I like how all the Knicks fans are like, oh, he's done. He's past his prime. He's been that way for years. But he was the only one playing defense in New York.
You think it's funny? Do you think it's funny they have a player whose last name is Chandler and then a player whose first name is Chandler? So how does that work when you're trying? You're gonna have to just say Tice instead of because you don't. You're gonna have Chandler and they both run to the same spot.
Good thing his name isn't Parson Chandler.
But we're ripping on him, I guess, a little bit. But Chandler Parsons is a really good player. Now the contract he got was pretty meaty. It's let me see, 14.70 this year, then 15, and then 16. So it's an ascending contract for not max money, but pretty close. So
pretty close to max money. It's they poached him. Houston was in turmoil. You have to overpay if you want guys. He's a vast improvement over Sean Marion and Vince Carter.
Well, is he that much of an improvement, though? I mean, because they provided
things. Just has youthful legs.
True.
He's like a third of their age. Yeah. And he was developing, and he's a third option. You don't need to be – he's not brought in to be a star.
So they dump Calderon, in the Chandler deal, but you think that – Jameer and Felton, yeah, I could see that. I could see that Jameer and Felton together might actually work out because they're more dynamic than Jose is. Because Calderon was just a good shooter and a good passer, but he wasn't able to go out of the box and do special things for you. Whereas
you got Monta who can play point, and you got Devin Harris who can play point.
Monte Ellis was like on his best basketball behavior, it seemed like.
Yep, and that's. The thing with Dallas is their team always plays to the coach. I don't know how it is, but everyone has their role and they stick to it.
Rick Carlisle, you're alluding to him. He's one of the smarter coaches out there. A lot of people say the 2011 team was helped by the fact they had two really good assistants. One was Terry Stotts, who ran the offense. He's now the head coach of the Blazers. And the other was Dwayne Casey, who I don't think not that many people are fond of. He ran the defense there, and now he's coaching with the Toronto Raptors. But they still are a pretty good team, and like we already talked about, they gave San Antonio a challenge. But can this team give San Antonio an even sterner challenge, like for, say, knocking them out?
This team, I think, has the tightest window because if they want to knock out San Antonio – they have to, you know, put the foot on the gas, but they can't take it off too much because you have a lot of teams like Memphis and New Orleans and Phoenix who are all biting for that 8 seed that they seem to hover around.
Yeah, there's a lot of headroom. I mean, everyone's trying to reach for the same straw there, and they're not too far apart, especially once you get outside of this division, which is so good because once you get out of here, you realize, wow, it's a lot easier. If I was in the Northwest or the Pacific, but you know, you're stuck with what you got. I want to ask you a serious question, though, Adam. Why is Brandon Knight still on Why is Brandon Wright still on this team?
I don't know. I didn't see the hype with him coming out of UNC. He fizzled in Golden State. He's backing up Dirk Nowitzki, so he's going to get, what, 10 minutes a game?
You remember how with the Lakers they always had to put in a power forward just because? And they didn't have the money. Well, that's like what Brandon Wright is. It's like the reason why we're talking about Brandon Wright like this is because he is going to be a de facto starter at power forward because of the way this is built. Dirk Nowitzki is a power forward, but he doesn't play as many minutes as people think. He sits a lot of games, and he has to rest a lot in order to save his legs for the fourth quarter, which forces Brandon Wright to play a lot of major minutes.
Well, the question I have for this team is the bench. What are you going to do when the starting five goes out? You're left with Brandon Wright, Richard Jefferson, Bernard James, Devin Harris.
Our buddy Charlie Villanueva.
Yeah, if he sticks around and doesn't play himself out of that team too. There's not you're relying on your starting five to win you games, and with an older core of players, it could be very tough.
Well, the bench isn't bad though. Like, I wouldn't call it a bad bench. They got some interesting pieces. I think Ivan Johnson, who went overseas last year, I remember he played for the Hawks, and he was a nice, you know, like meaty big man. I mean, he was a guy that could bang with you inside. So, you know, it's Deron Lamb's a decent shooter. I remember him at Kentucky. I don't know much about Gale McHale. I don't know. I mean, I know Justin Rosero.
Gale McHale from the Israeli League. Yeah. Rosero is big on Ricky Lito, who has shown absolutely nothing. He didn't even play for PC. He
Sorry, JT.
suspended for the year. And
But
he signed a 4-year deal, so that was smart on him. He's on the team. Put him down in the D League. Have him develop another year.
So Ellis played pretty much to audition to show people that he wasn't washed up and that he wasn't a selfish player. But do you think he can do an encore performance of that?
I think he can. Like I said, everyone plays in the Carlisle system. It's just they have a very tight window. Like, what? Where do you see them finishing? Do you think I'll say 48 wins.
I think they'll be above 50, and I think they're actually I think they're going to be the team that challenges San Antonio the most once you get outside of the Alamo. I think they're the one team that can really give them trouble. But that's it's a reach, though. I agree with you. It's a real changeover from the previous team, like you mentioned. 5 of the last 9 scorers are gone. 3 of the last of the top 4 rebounders are gone. So it's interesting.
I see him at 48 wins, and that will be the right around where the 8 spot will fall.
That's about one win worse than they did last year. So almost the same team. It's basically
almost the same team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different team, same results, basically. You know, the more things change, the more they stay the same, according at least on your prediction. And you wouldn't be far off. I would bet that, you know, the predictors have it the same way, about 48 wins. But, all right, we're going to go ahead and leave Dallas, but we're not going to get out of the state of Texas just yet, because the second part to the answer to our trivia question about who's the other team that has won an NBA championship in this division outside of the Spurs, that would be, and this one was a long, long time ago, about 20 years ago, the Houston Rockets. Now, the Houston Rockets went all in last summer when they signed Dwight Howard, when they already had James Harden. So you had your top two guard and your top center, and you basically tried to surround him with a couple of nice intermediary parts, like a guy who we just talked about who departed in free agency, Chandler Parsons, Terrence Jones, Lynn Sanity, Jeremy Lin, and a lot of things changed in the summer, right?
They went all in last year, and they figured they could go all in this year. Some people like that they're, you know, the management keeps trying, swinging for the fences, but it backfired on them big time.
They did. They lost. Go ahead.
You let Jeremy Lin service, not worth the contract, but he's decent. You let him go for nothing. You let Omar Asik go for nothing. Mm. You panic. You lose Chandler Parsons, and you're very bitter about losing Parsons. And then you get Trevor Ariza and be like, oh, everything's wonderful again.
To try to detail it without going into too much of it is that Chandler Parsons was given an offer sheet because he was a restricted free agent as a second-round pick. So what happened is Daryl Morey swung for the fences because he must have convinced himself that he was either going to get Carmelo Anthony in free agency or Chris Bosh. And the rumor was out there that he was going to offer Chris Bosh a max contract if the Miami Heat fell apart. And Bosh, we don't know how close he really was to taking the deal, but what happened is Daryl Morey basically played a game of chicken and got hit by the car, because by the time Chandler Parsons had agreed to sign the offer sheet to Dallas, he passed on matching it, and then Chris Bosh re-signed for max money to go back to Miami. So, and then not only that, he also traded Omer Asik to New Orleans and Jeremy Lin to the Lakers for basically nothing.
For these magical deals that never happened. He basically played his hand. Dallas swooped in. They said, we'll offer this deal right while all this is happening. We know you, Houston can't sign it because they still think they could get Bosch and Melo. And now you have Clint Capella
from Switzerland,
who they wanted to stay. They wanted him to stay over. He was like, nope, I'm coming over. Trevor Ariza, Jason Terry, who's bounced around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They put a lot of money into Costas Popping Locking.
Yeah.
Kualu.
A bitter war of words between Cuban and Maury. So obviously there's some hard feelings there about the way Parsons left Houston. They obviously wanted to keep him and they couldn't. But they tried to patch it up a little bit by getting the next best small forward that was in the open market, and that was Trevor Ariza. The deal that go ahead.
Trevor Ariza, his deal was, I believe, $10 million a year. It was a smart deal because he will now cover for James Harden's anemic defense. Patrick Beverley, not a good player, but will cover for James Harden anemic defense.
Patrick Beverley is one of those classic new type of 3-and-D guys. You know, 3-and-D, when we say that, is a guy who's good at getting open for three-point shots and plays good man-to-man defense. And Beverley fits that role. Now, he's a restricted free agent next year, so it'll be interesting to see if they can try to keep him too, because they're already they're right on the $66 million mark, which is the current salary cap. So if they want to dip into the luxury tax and keep Patrick Beverley and another guy that we're going to talk about, Terrence Jones, it's going to be interesting to see if they could pull that off. What do you see for Terrence Jones at power forward? Because he had some nice moments there playing alongside Howard.
This is my big question mark with this team. You have Donatas Montaneos. You have Terrence Jones. Both show flashes. One of these players need to do something. There is no third option on this team. You're not going to have Ariza scoring 20 points. Patrick Beverley will give you, maybe 10 if you're lucky. Mm-hmm. You need one of these two guys to step up, and I don't know if either of them are ready to right now.
Well, let's get this out of the way. Is this team better than the team last year?
No.
No, and that team last year had won 54 games, got eliminated by the Blazers in a pretty entertaining series. I'm going to be honest, even though it was a six-game series, if you really watch the games, they could have gone either way. I could have seen the Rockets win 4-2 against the Blazers. So
it could have gone either way, and here is really the X factor for this team, I believe, is Kevin McHale.
Mm-hmm.
Dwight Howard, is he going to run off another coach?
He's good at it.
This team, that's what he seems to be doing best right now, and I really don't know if McHale can stay around. The team might suffer because the team is set up now to be Harden and Howard.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah,
you're putting all your chips in on them.
I'm glad you made that point, because that's the interesting thing about Harden and Howard when they first got together is that it was like, oh, wow, they got Dwight Howard. But they also have Chandler Parsons, and they have Jeremy Lin, and they have a couple other guys that Daryl Morey was assembling over the years through this Moneyball style of, management that he had. So it was like, oh, wow, Daryl Morey's got all of his little prospects, and he's got two big superstars. And it worked out well, but now all your guys that you built up, they took big cash deals somewhere else, or you unloaded them. So now all you got left is two guys.
Yeah, that's it. You have two guys. But here is the question. I think I'll end on this. They have an $8.4 million trade exemption now.
How did they How did they get that?
Jeremy Lin, I believe, or is that from either him or a Sheik? Because they took nothing. They just took him for nothing.
Yeah, it may have been from Lin.
But they got this money, and you could get a nice point guard now. Maybe a Rubio, maybe a Rondo, if you're going to try to swing with the fences. Maybe somebody like a Brandon Jennings, who you just come in and just pass. They have this little chip right now that might help them. So this team, if they stand pat, I don't see them doing much, but that $8 million could come in handy.
Well, there's no such thing as a stupid question, just stupid people who ask them, so I'll be the stupid one who asks it. James Harden at point guard doesn't work?
No, because doesn't matter where he is. He's going to be shooting it, and he's going to be controlling the ball.
So is he kind of like in that Allen Iverson role where he's going to get 25, he's going to fake his way to the free throw line when he goes into the hole and does that lift the arms thing that he loves to do, and you just have to deal with it when he handles the ball that you're not going to get it back?
Last year he shot 16 shots a game. That, he was by far, Parsons was second with 13, mm-hmm. 6.5 threes a game. So it doesn't matter who was that point guard. Harden's just going to take over by himself. So
mm-hmm.
If you want to move hard into the one, who? What are you going to put? You're going to put old man Jason Terry in there on the two?
The Jason Terry one was interesting because they did need a backup point guard, but God knows what he's got left.
Exactly. So how many wins do you see from them?
Well, I don't really
see. 50 is the benchmark.
I think it'll be over 50. And I think they'll be firmly in the playoffs, but I don't know how much of a threat they're going to be now that they've lost a really good backup rebounder. And I just was not – I'm not sure about some of the other additions that they made. I did think, though, that Harden played well for Team USA, and I thought actually some of the other guys that they have, like Jeff Adrian, Ish Smith, I don't know about the other Greek guy, Kostas Papanalo. I've never seen him before, so he's sight unseen.
They gave a lot of money to him, though.
It's interesting.
They use most of their mid-level for him, so that's why I don't know anything about him. But
is he the next to Sheik?
No, because he's a three.
Oh lordy, I don't understand.
He's
that
a three.
One.
Clint Capella is just the Clint Capella is a, he's really a power forward.
He's an Energizer Bunny. He's a Swiss Energizer Bunny.
But he's really – he has a thin frame. He needs to bulk up.
And he can't shoot. So Lord knows what he can do. But, you know, with Terrence Jones there, you still got a nice, firm power forward. Trevor Ariza is a solid player. So at the end of the day, I can see them getting over 50 wins, which still might not get you second place in this division.
Yeah, I have them at 50. I just don't see – and, you know – Not to say that was really uninspired talk. We will just – let's move to a very uninspired team now.
Yeah.
With Memphis.
Yeah, and it's going to be it's kind of apropos that we're going to put this team third because it always seems like the Memphis Grizzlies are always kind of like sandwiched in the middle. They're just kind of hanging around. You know, you watch wrestling at all, Adam?
Yes.
Okay, it reminds me of – It reminds me that
on the Place to Be Nation, who doesn't watch wrestling here?
And they got Shawn Michaels. He used to call Owen Hart that little nugget that you couldn't flush. That's Memphis. They're that little nugget that you couldn't flush.
A dated reference there.
It's dated, but it's the good times, you know.
Well, the thing with Memphis is, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but they were really the underdogs like 5 years ago. It was who is this scrappy defensive team? They came out of nowhere. And then they just sort of stayed there, and they just tried to stay where they are, and they haven't really improved. And
but you know what I got to say about that, though, Adam, is that stagnancy in a situation for what they have is actually not the worst idea. Because for the personnel that they have with the big guys, with the focus on playing interior defense, being physical, grit and grind, as they called it when Lionel Hollins was there, I think that actually works for them to not change too many things so that when they do, it's not terribly dramatic and the game plan stays the same.
Yeah, and the problem with that is just you get older.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Allen was a great defensive signing 4 years ago, 4 years older. Tayshaun Prince is, I don't even know how he's still.
Tayshaun Prince is washed up, and now he's basically a contract that everyone's trying to get out the way.
You know, but he's there, and he's getting older, and they're just not, they're maxed out where they are. They're at a wall, and just, you know, I thought Mike Miller would give him a spark last year. He's obviously proved to be a little over the hill, but
he played okay against the Thunder, you know, but
he turned it on. He was supposed to, but you know, when he's not that big scoring machine that you thought he could put on, like, you know, just go on a tear like he used to.
They lost Mike Miller, so they needed a small forward. So they plugged in a former Dallas Maverick, Vince Carter. So, you know, we have Lynn Sanity leaving Houston, and now we got Vince Sanity back in Memphis, but I don't think the Vince Sanity is quite that strong. Vince Carter is a guy, I've never been a really big fan of him, but every now and then he'll pull off one of his nice little dunks, you know, going down the baseline every now and then. But he's a nice contributor. He's a guy that if you need somebody that can provide you a three-pointer or maybe a nice athletic move, Vince Carter can do that for you.
Vince does not get enough credit. Now, you know, obviously he's known for screwing over Toronto, but people don't mention how he completely changed his game from that high flyer to just that spot up three guy.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't really lose. He's still in the upper echelon sort of guards because he was able to change his game. He knew he was losing a step, so he developed, which you don't really see much.
Yeah,
he
sank one of those three-pointers to beat the Spurs in Game 3 of the playoffs in the first round in the Dallas-San Antonio series we were just talking about, but those are two teams in this division. This is a different one. And we had talked about the cap and how they're kind of stuck, they got their backs against the wall a little bit, not just because of Tony Allen's contract and the fact that they're still trying to get rid of Tayshaun Prince's, but you got Mike Conley's, who's at $8 million, but actually $8 million to $9 million a year is actually not a bad deal for Mike Conley. Do you think he's improved over the years?
He was overpaid when they first gave him that deal, and now it's become a bargain.
Mm-hmm.
His numbers are, he's averaging 17 and 6 for $8 million a year. He has become a solid veteran now from that kid who was just relying on his speed.
Now here's my swerve. Is he an elite point guard?
There are very few elite point guards in the league left. He is in the top tier, the second tier of point guards. You need a starting point guard who can maintain the starting point guard role. Mm-hmm. Not like a Patrick Beverley or a Brandon Jennings. He is above that level. He's not the top guys. He will not be Chris Paul, but he is a notch below where he could be a solid third option.
So, and also to talk about the point guard position, Conley's played well, but they decided to keep the guy that they had backing up. So they re-signed Beno Udrich, who was kind of journeyman veteran, but he played so well in the playoffs that they decided to keep him. And another guy who played well coming out of Greece, even though he played at the University of Florida, was Nick Calathes. So he's going to be back too. I think he has to serve a suspension though for testing positive for an anti-inflammatory right before the playoffs. So you're going to have basically the story of the entire team. Everything kind of stays the same, even though they did make some minor changes. You got Quincy Pondexter back. Costa Kufos plays really well, especially if you need to sit Randolph or Gasol.
Yep, him and John Luer he's serviceable. Not another non-sex. Mm-hmm. Another, he's not sexy, but he can bang on the boards.
And I kind of liked their two draft picks. Jordan Adams is not athletic at all. He had I think what they said is that he had the worst standing reach in the history of the NBA combine or something like that. So an athlete, Jordan Adams is not, but he's a very deceptive scorer. He's sneaky. And he was able to do well in summer league. And the other guy that they got out of Tennessee, a big body dude, just almost in the vein of Randolph, was Jarnell Stokes out of Tennessee. And I would bet you're going to see Stokes a lot, and I think you're going to see Kufos a lot.
Yeah, you need them. You need these two kids to step up to really lighten the load on Gasol and Randolph, because come playoff time, they can't be putting in the minutes. They can't be putting in 35 minutes a game in the regular season.
Well, they have the reputation, even though Lionel Hollins is gone and Dave Jaeger, he's the head coach now. The one problem, though, is that they have this reputation because of the grit and grind thing for being a great rebounding team. But the truth was last year they were 19th in rebounding, so they did have to improve it. So they were able to address that need in the draft and also by keeping some of their pieces together. The thing is that they – you know what's interesting is that Houston might be beneficial by slowing things down a little bit, whereas Memphis is perfectly comfortable in slowing things down, which is far different from pretty much every team in the NBA these days. They're sort of an old hat.
Yeah. Yeah, and that has happened to the team, unfortunately. I don't think that's what they set out to be, but –
yeah,
that's what they've become.
They have very old hats in their closet. You're right. So, you know what this is? It's like whenever they get the 8 seed or the 7 seed, it's just like a shrug. It's like, yeah, I kind of thought so. But the thing is, But here's the thing. Do you think this team could go a little farther than they normally do? Now, I say that like they've never accomplished anything. They've gone to the second round, the first round, and they've gone to the conference finals. So they've definitely made strides. But do you see them really going having any upward mobility?
This year, no. Mm-hmm. This year, the thing is, I think with the West is very crowded at the bottom of the playoffs now, where you're going to have good teams who can knock off the San Antonios, and Portland's aren't that good this year, I don't think. So it's the West is really any team can win. You're not, whether you're a 2 or a 7, you're not really safe.
Yeah, and I think the other thing about Memphis that always worried me, and it still does, and they've been this way for years since they've started getting on their run. They were dead last in 3-point attempts and 3-pointers made. And I just think that that's going to kill you in the playoffs if you can't get easy baskets. And I think
that's why they got Vince Carter.
Yeah, they addressed that need just a little bit. I don't know if that's him alone is going to help them. I think the fact
it's that – I'm sorry about that. When you have Tayshaun Prince on the floor, you're playing 4-on-5 on offense. So Vince at least will stretch him out, and he'll give you a 3. You don't need to up your percentage and up your shots, but he'll at least stretch that floor.
And you said you gave me a unique fact that they have like 7 players with 2 first names.
If you stretch it hard enough, this is like I was amazed to find this, but Courtney Lee. 2 first names, Tony Allen, Patrick Christopher, Zach Randolph, Earl Clark, Carter.
What about
Clark Griswold? Carter is could be a first name.
What about Michael Beasley? you know, that's a normal thing when people say Michael Beasley's name followed by laughter. But
he is such a disappointment. Yeah. He could have been really good. He destroyed everybody in K-State.
Do you think he'll make the team at the end of the, like, do you think he'll make it for opening night? He made the Heat.
I hope so, because he can provide a spark that really you're not going to get from, like, Quincy Pondexter. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how many contracts are guaranteed and if he's just there to appease an agent.
You know, you remember that old acronym that they have for computer software, WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get? Well, that's what – it's kind of – I feel like that with Memphis. It's just like it is what it is. You are what your record says you are. And
yeah.
What you see for their record?
I see – what did I have for Dallas? 48 wins. I see equally 48 wins, and they'll probably battle it out for the 8th seed.
Just like last year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So basically – a retread.
Why, do you think they're going to be over 52?
No. I have them – I definitely have them – I have them fourth. I actually have them fourth in the division because I just don't think they're going to be as good as Houston. So – and I think that was their rank last year. They were the fourth team in the division, yet they made the playoffs and almost knocked out the Thunder. So once you get in the playoffs, it's a different story, you know, depending on what your matchups are. But – you know, like we keep saying to bookend all our talking points for this podcast, in this division, it's just tough. It's tough to make any headway. So, yeah, fourth place is about right. So,
yep.
Moving on. Yeah, that's a good one for the Memphis Grizzlies. Yep. Moving on, we're going to go to a team that's near and dear to my heart. Oh, this is going to be tough. And it was the only team that had a losing record in the Southwest Division last year, and that was the recently renamed New Orleans Pelicans. Now, they got new unis, they got a new court design, they hosted the All-Star game again, and the problem was, even though you put a lot of new on it, it felt like the same old shit, because they went 34-48. They made a lot of moves, though, in the summer by buying in on Drew Holiday and Tyreke Evans to go along with Eric Gordon, who I think is one of the worst contracts in all of sports. And they added that alongside Anthony Davis, your ascending superstar power forward, but it didn't really work out. It didn't really click, did it?
No, they all got injured, and it's really hard to tell – because Drew Holiday played like a third of the season, maybe.
Yeah, he missed missed 48 games.
He didn't know what, you forget about Jason Smith, who was supposed to contribute. He was out for most of the season. Mm-hmm.
Ryan Anderson missed
Austin Rivers games. Might as well have been injured. The problem with this team is we don't know what they provide. You go all in, you make a big signing in Tyreek Evans, who could have been just the toxicity of Sacramento. We don't know. You get Drew Holiday, who's an all-star point guard, and they don't play for you. So we don't know, were they bad or were they just injured? And because of the cap, they're forced to play who they have. Because the one thing I noticed about this team is they have a very expensive roster.
They do. They're pretty much right up against the cap, thanks to the situation that they have with Holiday on top of Gordon, who's got two more years on his deal. So you're and then not only that, in this offseason, you added Omer Asik, to which you gave up nothing. So you basically took on cap. So right now on their
that
salary,
that was a great signing, though. Not just from a cap point.
Mm-hmm.
He is vastly underrated. I don't know what people have against him. He is just a pure center who is going to play like a pure center.
They don't like Asik because he's not a fancy scorer, but he's a great rebounder and shot blocker.
Next to Anthony Davis, that is a great pairing, I think.
I like it a lot because it finally gives Anthony Davis a center that can accommodate him, because there was a lot of lineups that Monty Williams, the head coach for the Pelicans, would throw out there where Davis would play the four, and at center spot you would see either Jason Smith sometimes, and then you would see Alexis Ajinka, who's not a terrible player, but let's be honest, he's a D-League lifer. And then I remember him playing Orenze Onuwaku a couple of times. It was just like you have this like diamond here, and then you have a big bucket of shit right next to it. And it's like, well, we can easily take advantage of this. We go after the bucket of shit. So now you got a really good NBA center with size and a good rebounding to go with it. I mean, Omer Asik can snag rebounds in his sleep. But he does have a $14 million expiring salary. So,
well, he's only $8 million. They're paying him $15 million, but he counts $8 million because of the way the contract is. It's very it's funny. Ever since those three, was it Landry Fields, Jeremy Lin, and Asik, nobody has signed anybody to these big escalator deals.
Toronto is still regretting Landry Fields.
I don't. We're gonna get Steve Nash. That made no sense. But we're getting off topic. That go check for Toronto talk. Check out that podcast. We're in the Southwest.
We're
the one person I think is gonna be hurt by this is Ryan Anderson, and you disagree.
Yeah, because I think Anderson, in limited minutes as a sixth man or even a seventh man, I think he can still work out because he's a stretch four, and stretch fours. And I think we're going to see this a little bit with Doug McDermott out in Chicago. Stretch fours do not need a lot of time in order to get hot. They only need maybe a few open shots in order to get your 9 or 12 or 15 points. So the idea of Ryan Anderson being hurt by not playing 30 minutes or not playing 40 minutes is, I think that's a little bit of a contradiction, because I think that they'll be able to make it work for him where he doesn't have to play as often. But he can still shoot the rock. But the thing is,
he led the team in minutes last year.
He did, but he also got hurt earlier. He got a neck injury, so you don't want to waste him too early.
Everybody got injured last year.
You're right.
The only one who didn't get injured, I think, was like Al-Farouq Aminu, because he didn't do anything.
Yeah, Eric Gordon.
He's just there by default.
Eric Gordon missed 18 games. That's because of his chronically broken vagina. But I hate Eric Gordon. Let me look at his numbers here. 14.898, and then a player option that for 15.514. I know that.
So you think he's done?
Oh, my God, yes.
You think?
I think the mistake was made from the very beginning when Monty played Tyreek Evans as the sixth man and started Gordon. It should have been flipped. They should have had Tyreek as the scoring guard. Drew Holiday was going to be the point guard, and he played well before his injury. and Eric Gordon should sit his ass on the bench next to Austin Rivers and let them fight it out and see who wants to win the spot. And if Austin Rivers is not as good as a malcontent shitbird Eric Gordon, then Austin Rivers needs to go freaking take a plane ride out to Los Angeles and go play on the preseason roster for his daddy out in Doc Rivers.
Wow.
I mean, Austin Rivers is not.
I don't even know if I dare bring up Jimmer Fredette.
Well, Jimmer can shoot.
Your big signing.
Jimmer can shoot. So I'm
he's
not...
your official. He's the official backup point guard now. If Drew Holiday goes down, you're getting 40 minutes of Jimmer.
Well, they got Deontay Christmas, so I got a feeling he'll stick. So because the reason why he's going to have to play backup is because of the people they lost. Because they did lose a couple of valuable guys. They lost Brian Roberts. They lost Al-Farouq Aminu. They lost Anthony Morrow, who is a really good three-point shooter, and he went to the Thunder. Jason Smith, we just talked about him. He went to the Knicks. And James Sutherland, I think he's with the Blazers. The thing I didn't like about that team was that they were like a square peg in a round hole, because Monty Williams says that he wants to commit to the defensive end. He's a defensively minded coach. Yet they were 19th in scoring defense. They had a field goal percentage for the 3-point line that was sixth place in the NBA. That's excellent. But do you know what their attempts number was? It was 29th in the league. So you're telling me that you're really good at shooting the three, yet you never used it. So I think it all goes back, like you said, to the coach and what kind of culture you install. And even though Anthony Davis is making huge strides and he's becoming a superstar, they need something. They need the right direction around him so that they can maximize their talent to go forward.
Okay, so then the final question on them, do they hit 500?
Yes, but they don't make the playoffs. I think this is going to be one of those divisions where everybody gets 500 or above. But in this case, because of the rest of the divisions that we're going to talk about in the West, I just think there's no room for them.
Okay. Fair enough.
Let me ask you this. Anthony Davis, is he the third best player in the NBA?
No.
Who is it?
Oh, you got LeBron, you got Kevin Love, you got Chris Paul, you got
Carmelo. Well, I've got LeBron and Durant 1-2.
You got Kevin Durant. I've already mentioned like four players.
You think they're better than AD right now?
He's developing.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to be up there, but he was asked to do a lot on a team that didn't really have anything. So is he number three right now? No. I think that's just your homerism coming out.
Yeah, a little bit. The player to watch to me is everybody who got hurt. Because if they had stayed healthy, like you said, then this would have been a totally different team. I think we would have seen a little bit. But the coach has got to change a few parts of the lineup in order to make the chemistry work, because I thought he made a few very critical game plan errors right from the beginning that doomed him before the injuries even hit. And I think that's a big part. I will say that I saw Russ Smith in Summer League, the Louisville guard who helped win the national title out there. He played very well. So the people who think that he was too small to play in the pros, I think you're going to be very mistaken. I think he's going to play.
Summer League doesn't count. Summer League, you have...
I'm trying to be optimistic here, Adam. Damn it.
All right. Well, then let's move on.
Yeah, optimism is leaving us, so we're going to go to a place where everything is optimistic because we're saving the best for last, literally, because we are going to the defending world champion, San Antonio Spurs. Now, the Spurs went to the finals the year before that and had about the most crushing, unbelievable, kick-in-the-groin loss that you could have possibly had in Game 6 when Ray Allen tied it, and then they lost in overtime, and then you know how it went from there where Miami Heat wound up winning their second straight title. The Spurs exacted revenge, and they did it all season long by having the best record in the NBA, 62-20. They beat the Thunder, who had beaten them in the Western Conference Finals the 2 years previously. And then they got the Miami Heat again. And they made that one count, huh?
Yep. And now this is their retirement year. This is the farewell tour. And the question is, do they still have that hunger? Which you seem to say yes.
Well, you really think this will be the end for Duncan and Ginobili?
I believe so. How long can they keep playing? Every year they keep saying one more year, one more year. Everyone was expecting them to go after this year with the championship. They said one more year. And I think when they go, Popovich will go. Because you think he wants to be on a rebuilding team?
Well...
And don't say Kawhi Leonard's going to be... He's going to replace Duncan.
Well, no.
Nobody ever replaces
Tim Duncan. But I think Greg Popovich is smart enough, and R.C. Buford, the GM, are smart enough to know that they will never put themselves in a position where they have to rebuild and blow it up and start over, even if they lose Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili, regardless of how much of an impact that's going to have. I think they're going to be able to find something that they can take advantage of with their roster, along with Kawhi Leonard, Tony Parker, Danny Green, and other ancillary parts, to keep going, keep chugging along, never dip below 500, and always be in the mix to win because of their championship experience that they've gained. Now, a lot of the players that they had outside of Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan, before the 2013 finals, none of those people had played in the finals. Now they've been in two in a row, and they've tasted gold. Do you think that that's going to make them hungrier?
No, because they're all role players. The thing about San Antonio is everyone has a role and they all know it. Mm-hmm. So, Marco Bellinelli was their big signing last year, if I recall, just for his role. You're not bringing in a superstar. The only addition they had was their draft pick, who everyone was like, why did they take him?
Kyle Anderson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who's what, like a 6'10 point guard?
Yeah, he's Boris Diaw, only not French and not fat.
Yeah, so they didn't change their team at all. So none of these guys are going to go on other teams and be all-stars or even be anything.
Yeah, good segue there, because we were just about to talk about some of the moves that they made, and it's really not a long list. The only player that I don't think that's going to be in the mix is Aaron Baines, who is an Australian big man. They re-signed Boris Diaw. They re-signed Patty Mills, but they did it knowing that Patty Mills is going to be out for about 6 months with major shoulder surgery. So what they did is they picked up as an undrafted free agent Bryce Cotton out of Providence. So he's going to be a scoring guard that might be plugged in for scoring purposes, just like Patty Mills was. They also re-signed
He'll be plugged in for 3 minutes when they're already up by 20.
Pretty much. That's what Patty Mills that's what Patty Mills was. Well, he played more minutes than that because there were some games where Tony Parker couldn't play, and Mills was a point guard coming out of high school and college. So I don't know if Bryce Cotton is a point guard, though. So it'll be interesting to see if they can make that work. I think the guy that they're going to wind up using a lot more in that vicinity is Corey Joseph, who I thought played a lot better at the end of the season. And Tiago Splitter looked a lot better in the finals than he did in the finals before that. So you see improvement there out of the big man out of Brazil. It's the same roster, basically, but it's going to be interesting to see how they can improve on top of all the great things that they did last year. I mean, if you look at their stats, I mean, they didn't go wrong in anything. They were like tops. They were sixth in offense. They were sixth in defense. They were one of the best. They were one of the best defensive rebounding teams in the league. Their 3-point shooting was unbelievable. They were first in assists. When you look at their numbers, it's like their numbers are even better than what you see on television.
Yeah, but they are who we think they are. They're not going to surprise anybody. You know what you're going to get from them, and that's quality basketball.
Let me ask you this. Kawhi Leonard, is he a superstar?
He can be, but he's not there yet.
How much money will he get once his...
He'll get max money.
He'll get max money before
he'll get max. I'm just going to... Because San Antonio's not going to let him leave. When Duncan goes, you're going to have to replace him, and Kawhi Leonard will be your face of your franchise.
Well, that's my theory. I think what's going to happen is that they're going to give him a new deal starting next season. They're not going to do the restricted offer at all. They're just going to go ahead and give him a max deal. And what they're going to do is they're going to have Duncan and Ginobili sign smaller deals for like another year or 2 years, and then they're going to walk away. That's my.
Well, so this year, over under 60 wins.
Under. Because I felt like last year when they went 62-20, even though they had a hiccup there with an injury to Kawhi Leonard, I think he broke his hand, everything else pretty much went right, and everything fell into place for San Antonio to make a run, and they had that fire, they had that hunger that they just wanted to exact revenge in the finals for not winning it, not closing out, and they were so desperate to get every advantage that they could that they played out the regular season as hard as they could so that they could get home court advantage throughout. And I don't want to say complacency, because I don't think Popovich is that lazy of a coach. Popovich is the best coach in all of basketball, maybe ever. But I do see a little bit of slippage there where Oklahoma City might jump them, where there might be another team out there that I'm not thinking about that might, maybe L.A. Clippers. Maybe somebody will go out in there, win 60 games, and San Antonio will be the one that'll have to go on the road and steal a win.
Well, we shall. So basically, we both agree. You have San Antonio up top and four teams who are all interchangeable and have been essentially trading players to each other.
Well, do you think this is the strongest division in the league?
By far.
By far. You don't think the Northwest is
pretty
good?
From top to bottom. If New Orleans is your bottom team and you're predicting them to be 500, and that's the worst team in your division, that's a pretty solid division.
There's a couple divisions with two, like, awesome teams. Like, I can already talk
but
about.
But a lot of garbage.
A lot of
for every Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Every Cleveland, you have a Milwaukee.
Yeah, well, look at L.A. and so. Look at L.A. Clippers and Golden State. They're both going to be really good. We all know that. But then you go out. And then even Phoenix is interesting. But then after that, Lakers, not going to be good.
Yeah.
Sacramento, dog shit. Sorry, Todd Weber. But
for every Oklahoma City Thunder, you have a Minnesota Timberwolves. This, from top to bottom, is the strongest division.
So we saved the best for last, so I'll save the best question for last. Does San Antonio repeat? Something that they've
never done. I don't
think
so.
No?
I don't think they're eight. I think they're going to slow down. But I say that every year. One of these years, I'm going to be correct.
They've never won back-to-back titles.
No, I don't see them. I see them having to go on the road and having to play at Cleveland or at Chicago in the end might be kind of harder.
Yeah, but that would entail Cleveland and Chicago getting hungrier than San Antonio is and getting a better record. But that's the really cool thing about San Antonio winning it all in the post-2010 era. Now you have a team that has a great system. You know, it's not just one guy. And now you have all these other teams, because it's a copycat league, trying to catch up to them. And I think that's the most fascinating part of this season. If any teams try to copy what the Spurs did, or is what the Spurs are doing just unique to them and something that you just can't replicate, I think that's going to be the most fascinating part of the season. I think it's going to increase numbers on offense for sure.
Yeah, by default, I guess. But, you know, again, we both agree. San Antonio will win a lot of games, like they do every year.
Yawn. But hopefully the podcast doesn't end in a yawn, because we're done now with the Southwest Division. We all know San Antonio is going to be there at the end of the day, but you got to look out at all these other teams. They're all really good, even my New Orleans Pelicans. So we're going to go ahead and just close this one out. This is Andrew Reich. You're going to hear me again and again and again for at least the next few weeks. Adam, anything else?
Nope. Check out the other previews. We will give equally bad predictions there.
Okay. And and like always, Michael Beasley, I'm sorry, but we got to end it with a laugh. Take care, guys.